Hello and welcome to Helicopter Online Ground School. This is Gary Cleveland, Chief Pilot. The creator of Helicopter Online Ground School, Kenny Keller, invites you to visit his site at www.helicopterground.com and see the four FAA-approved courses that are featured there. Private pilot, commercial pilot, certified flight instructor, and instrument pilot. This podcast is actually a live Tuesday training event featuring low rotor RPM recovery to prevent blade stall. Enjoy your podcast.
And we're back again. Kenny Keller, helicopterground.com. Today, low RPM. We got a bunch of stuff for you. We're going to roll a couple accident videos, talk about an EMS helicopter accident. Chris Hauser's here today along with Gary Cleveland. We are going to roll a video that we just did this morning, or Chris did. But first, let me say hi to everybody that's here. So far, we got John Marnell. John here from Stockholm, Sweden. Awesome, all the way from Sweden. Juanita Falk. Hi, team. Great to be with you. Riverside, SoCal. Jenny, first member, one of the first to join March 1st, 2012, back again this week. She was here last week. Brian from Las Vegas, Nevada, awesome. Max Flight Helicopter again. They've been the last couple weeks in Kissimmee, Florida. Brad Call. Hi, Kenny. Brad from Brisbane, Australia. Nice, Australia. If a little early Wednesday morning, but I'm here. Exactly, it's way early in Australia. Heck yeah, that's awesome you're here. Mad Murdoch, Mike from Charlottesville, Virginia. Sav, hey, Harley here. Rick is here from Vegas. Rick's been tuning every week, another member. Yes, awesome. Down there flying with Taz that does a lot of our videos in our instrument ground school. Jim Hardy, North Texas. Brand new solo endorsement for Rotorcraft. Had to come here to solo in my ship, so haven't actually lifted yet, doing final mechanical checks on rotorway. Nice. John Marnell, everything works. Awesome, thanks, John. Richard Foost from Orlando, Florida. Awesome. I'm going to roll the video that Chris Hauser shot for us this morning on the basics of low RPM from the Helicopter Flying Handbook, because we want to talk about the basics of what we need to know first. Then again, we're going to cover a couple of helicopter accidents, show a couple videos, talk about a helicopter EMS accident. And Chris Hauser is going to share with you a story about low RPM accident he was involved in, since we all are transparent here and tell about our helicopter past issues we've had with accidents. So we're going to try to get through most of the material, and then we'll take questions at the end. I'll be handling the questions today. I'll put them up on a screen for Chris and Gary to answer for you. So here goes video. This is new for ground school. We're going to replace the video that's been in there for 3 or 4 years that I shot way back. Chris shot a fresh, brand new one. So this will be going into ground school as the video for low RPM and low RPM recovery. So we're going to roll that video. It'll be about 7 minutes. Go ahead and leave your comments down below. Let us know where you're at. And we'll be back in about 7 minutes after the video.
Hello, everybody. Chris Hauser with Helicopter Online Ground. Today, we're talking about low rotor RPM, blade stall, and a recovery technique. The sources that we'll cite today are the Helicopter Flying Handbook, Robinson Safety Notice SN-10, and Robinson Safety Notice SN-24. Low rotor RPM can occur at any airspeed. Remember that, can occur at any airspeed. We're not an airplane. Airplane stalls at slow airspeeds. It doesn't matter how fast we're going, can occur at any airspeed. Causes can be as simple as rolling the throttle the wrong way, pulling more collective pitch than power available, and operating at high density altitude, high temperature, high gross weight. Blade stall. What happens when low rotor RPM is not corrected? Blades try to maintain the same amount of lift by increasing pitch, which increases drag, and in turn means more power is needed. When more power is not available to maintain RPM, the helicopter begins to descend, which changes relative wind and increases angle of attack. RPM not restored equals blade stall. When blade stall occurs, you have the possibility of blowback. And a blowback condition is, that's a term that we don't hear very often, but in a, and I'll take example as my little toy here, the R44. Blowback, advancing blade goes up, the retreating blade comes down, air, as the helicopter is descending, air pushes the tail boom up, the nose pitches down, and in extreme cases, the retreating blade actually chops off your tail boom. That's blowback. When the advancing blade goes up, retreating blade goes down. You could have excessive coning. Again, with my little toy here, excessive coning, I think we probably all know what that is. When the rotor blades, let's see if I can get this thing to cooperate, have excessive coning. When you start to pull pitch and the blades start to bend like that, and if you're too heavy or not enough power, the blades cone, just like that. I don't know if you can see that, but that's what it looks like. Once this happens, once you have blade stall, it's almost impossible to get smooth air flowing back across the rotor blade. You're in some big trouble. Blade stall is usually fatal, especially at higher altitudes. Remember that, blade stall is usually fatal. I have a diagram there showing the relative wind and the angle of attack of a blade of an unstalled. You can see that the wind going over the blade is nice and smooth, and then on a stalled blade, you can see that the disruptive of air toward the rear of the rotor there. The top picture shows an example of blowback. The rotor blade just chopped off the tail boom. And obviously, if there's no tail boom, there's no flight, you're pretty much doomed. The bottom picture is of an R22. As you can see the blades, how they're bent up, he had excessive coning. This is an actual accident, as you can see. I looked up the tail number and read the report, and I took this quote from there. It states, uncontrolled descent during the final portion of the autorotation consists with a main rotor stall, likely as a result of the premature application of collective pitch. The instructor in this example was killed. His student pilot lived. Something happened during the autorotation. He lost control, and as he came down, he pulled pitch too fast or too soon. You can see the blades coned up right before impact. Recovery for low rotor RPM. Roll on throttle and lower collective. Roll on throttle and lower collective. Roll on throttle and lower collective. I don't know how much easier it is to say it. It's that simple. When you hear or see the Robinsons, the Enstroms usually have a low rotor RPM warning system. The Robinson consists of a light and a horn. If I remember right, the Enstrom F28F has a horn and a light. Not quite sure what else is out there, but when you get that, you can also hear it. I mean, you can, as you start to fly a particular aircraft more and more, you can hear the rotors getting slow. You can hear the engine slowing down. So there, it's just simple, guys. Roll on throttle, lower collective. Roll on throttle, lower collective. That simple. Now, considerations. If you're hovering and you're only about 4 or 5 feet off the ground, there's a technique called milking the collective. It's just raising and lowering the collective several times to regain that RPM. It's just, it's a little bit of a nudge down and back up, nudge down, back up. The other one that I didn't put on here, and you think about, if you're hovering and you lose RPM and you can't get it back, who's to say just set it down? I'll talk about an accident later where that occurred. Just set it down and start again. If you're at altitude, the collective may only have to be lowered once to regain RPM. If you're flying along and you're at altitude and you get that low rotor RPM, just lower the collective a little bit, flatten out the blades, let them regain the RPM, and then raise collective a little bit to stop your descent. Tail rotor. We kind of don't think about the tail rotor during a low rotor RPM, but the tail rotor RPM is directly proportional to the main rotor RPM. If your main rotor RPM is low, your tail rotor RPM is going to be low. How's this affect? If you're low rotor RPM, the tail rotor may not produce adequate thrust to maintain directional control. So if you're flying or you're coming into land and you lose rotor RPM, just remember right before you touch down, you may not have the tail rotor thrust there to maintain directional control. In forward flight with power, if you apply aft cyclic, you can load the rotors. That'll speed them up. In forward flight without power, you should automatically enter an auto rotation. Remember, low rotor RPM and blade stall is greatest in small helicopters with low inertia rotor systems. And I, you know what, honestly, I didn't even think about that. But if you think about R22, you know, anybody who has experience in one of those, there you lose your rotor RPM very quickly. If same thing probably in a rotorway or any small helicopters. There is a safety factor built into most helicopters if RPMs fall below the green arc. I think the Robinson safety notice states that there's 2 seconds. I don't know about that. An R22 loses RPM very quickly. The Instrum, for sure, if your low rotor RPM gets low, you do have a factor there to recover. Remember this, if you don't remember anything else, RPM is life. If you lose your RPM, you're probably gonna lose your life. Lose RPM and don't correct it, you're probably gonna lose your life. And for the quote, aviation in itself is not inherently dangerous, but to an even greater degree than the sea, it is terribly unforgiving of any carelessness, incapacity, or neglect. All right, guys, leave your comments. Like to hear from you. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.
All right, and we're back. Got a few more people to mention. We got a good crowd today. This is awesome. Each week seems to get better and better. We got, I mentioned Rick Taz. Taz is here. He wasn't here last time I mentioned. Mark Schmidt. Mark from Sioux Falls. T. Gregory Berry here. Greetings from D.C. M.H. here, Atlanta. Jim Hardy, Rotorway has more than R22 by far, so I understand. All right, so next I'm going to have Gary cue up a PowerPoint that he has ready over there. It's from a helicopter accident that happened a few years ago. I remember this accident, and I want to go through some of the details because this shows you how it isn't just new pilots that run into a problem with losing RPM. This is from an EMS helicopter accident, and it changed a lot of talk in the industry because we do get out there all the time and we practice, you know, 60 or 70 knots on an entry for an auto, and we do everything in the protected environment, and we don't always get out in the real world and maybe do enough training with autos at cruise speed, you know, 100 knots, or in an EMS industry, maybe 120 knots. I know in 5 years in EMS, I flew a twin engine. We did not do a twin engine failure at cruise speed. We did not practice that. So I'm gonna roll that first. You got that ready, Gary? Yeah, hopefully my, let me know if somebody let us know in chat if for some reason the audio doesn't work correctly on this, but hopefully it does. So I'm gonna bring that up. Looks like we're still good to go. A Eurocopter AS350 B2 helicopter crashed following a loss of engine power as a result of fuel exhaustion. The pilot, flight nurse, flight paramedic, and patient were killed, and the helicopter was substantially damaged by impact forces. Day visual meteorological conditions prevailed at the time of the accident, and a company visual flight rules flight plan was filed. The helicopter impacted the ground in about a 40-degree nose-down attitude at a high rate of descent with a low rotor RPM. Wreckage examination determined that the engine lost power due to fuel exhaustion and that the fuel system was operating properly. The investigation revealed that the pilot did not comply with several company standard operating procedures that, if followed, would have led him to detect the helicopter's low fuel state before beginning in the first leg of the mission. After reaching the hospital, the pilot reported to the company's EMS communications center that he did not have enough fuel to fly to the hospital and requested help locating a nearby fuel option. During their conversation, the pilot did not report, and the communication specialist did not ask how much fuel was on board the helicopter, and neither of them considered canceling the mission and having fuel brought to the helicopter. After determining that there was one airport with Jet A fuel along the route of flight to the hospital, the pilot decided to proceed to the airport. The engine lost power about 1 nautical mile short of the airport. And I'm going to throw in there, Hauser and I went through this morning before going live, and these bad things always happen. Running out of fuel, you're a mile from the airport. You get into bad weather and go inadvertent a mile from the airport and a mile from the hospital. It's always that you've almost made your destination when bad things happen. Okay, so back to this presentation. And the pilot did not make the flight control inputs necessary to enter an auto rotation, which resulted in a rapid decay in rotor RPM. The NTSB determines that the probable causes of this accident were the pilot's failure to confirm that the helicopter had adequate fuel on board, to complete the mission, and notice that that says mission, I'm going to talk about that at the end, before making the first departure, his improper decision to continue the mission, and make a second departure after he became aware of critically low fuel level, and his failure to successfully enter an auto rotation. When the engine lost power due to fuel exhaustion, contributing to the accident were the pilot's distracted attention due to personal texting during safety critical ground and flight operations. And when you read the accident report, you'll learn more about, they go more into detail about him texting, in between the legs of the flight when he should have been paying attention to what he was doing. His degraded performance to fatigue, and I think they go more in that in the report again about, you know, he's probably at the end of his shift, probably worked 7 or 8, shifts, and he's probably tired. The operator's lack of a policy requiring that an operational control center specialist be notified of abnormal fuel situations. 4, the lack of practice representative of an actual engine failure at cruise airspeed in the pilot's auto rotation training in the accident, make, and model of helicopter, which I mentioned that when we went live with this. So this, we know as an industry, we got to get out more and make sure that we practice autos at cruise speed, not just in the pattern. And mission is up, and I want to mention mission because when I was in EMS for 5 years, towards the end of that 5 years, they said, you know what, guys, we don't want you using the terminology mission anymore. Because when you say mission, that means you got to do it, you got to get there, and that kind of comes from a military term. And the EMS company I worked for at one point said, you know what, we don't want to call them missions anymore. We want you to fly safely to point A to point B, haul your cargo and get there. Stop if necessary, don't do the flight if necessary. So mission, the term mission, makes you think, I have to do it. Go ahead and pop to the next slide there, Gary. Personal texting, again, I think I mentioned there's more in that accident report if you read it about what the guy was actually doing, texting a girlfriend, maybe he was having personal problems. I don't remember the exact details. And what else we got? Fatigue. So again, we know how fatigue in any environment, training, instructors, EMS, news reporting across the board, fatigue is a problem for any flight. And that's it for that one. So just to kind of sum up there, I wanted to throw that in because that gives you a more of a real world situation with some bad judgment chain that leads up to a loss of fuel that in turn, he doesn't properly enter auto rotation, loses RPM, and kills everybody on the flight. So next, I think I'll bring up our two instructors waiting over here in the wings and any input they can give you while I check comments and give me a little just time here to see who's here, see what comments we have. So here you guys go.
You made a couple of comments there while you were doing that, Kenny. And you know, one thing that I keep forgetting or don't think about is it's amazing to me because I mainly fly training helicopters that, you know, that's an EMS helicopter that's got a turbine engine in it and probably has all the power in the world, and yet you still got into low rotor RPM at the end. You know, so it doesn't matter if you're a Robinson R22 or a EC-135 or a Ericsson Skycrane, you know, no matter what you fly, you can still get into low rotor RPM. Anyway, yeah, a real world scenario or real world story that I have is I had an aircraft accident about 2.5 years ago or so, and it initially started with low rotor RPM that was a contributing factor, which eventually led to dynamic rollover, basically. Was flying in an Instrum and had a student with me, he was a rated pilot airplane, but was checking out the helicopter. It was about my fourth flight of the day, I guess, in this aircraft. And, we were just out over the runway doing some hovering. He had the controls. And, you know, I'm sure Gary and Kenny can both tell you, it's a fine line on when, you know, you have to let your student somewhat get out of control so he learns how to recover himself. So I was flying with him, he had the controls, and he was hovering, he was doing okay, and then all of a sudden, you know, RPM started to decay a little bit, and I'm telling him, you know, get that RPM back up there, and you know, he was working on it. And while he was, you know, when you're new, you kind of, you know, you can only concentrate on one task at a time. So while he was trying to concentrate on getting RPM back, his hovering kind of started to go all over the place. So we had some forward movement going, and he still wasn't correcting the RPM, wasn't getting the RPM back. So I eventually took over, and you know, I started, you know, doing what I needed to do, started milking the collective a little bit. We still had our forward speed. We were under ETL, but we still had pretty good forward speed. You know, I started milking collective, getting the RPM back, rolling the throttle on, doing what you got to do, and it just wasn't coming back. So, you know, a good way, if you're not getting it back, we were hovering. So what do? We were going to set it on the ground. You know, we'll do a run on landing. It's a good, you know, situation to show the new person that if you can't get it back and you're all close to the ground, just set it down and start again. So I had done this, you know, 100 times in the past. You know, here we are, low rotor RPM, forward movement. We'll just set her down with a run on landing and we'll be good to go. The contributing factor to mine, unfortunately, is as we were moving forward, we had now left the taxiway and was now over grass. Unfortunately, that morning it had poured down rain. I mean, just poured. There was standing water in the grass. Anyway, forward movement, run on landing. When we touched down, we hit straight, and unfortunately, we had a skid catch, and then we just rolled it. So, you know, contributing factor to the dynamic rollover was low rotor RPM. Now, if we were over the runway, you know, hard surface, we would have been great, no issues. If we would have been, if the grass was dry, we would have been no issues. There you go. There's how a low rotor RPM situation got into a dynamic rollover accident for me.
Another real world experience, and Chris gave you the what happens, you know, as CFIs, he kind of told you, you have to let your student go down some, let RPM get low, but knowing the point of no return, at what point, how far you let them go, and that's something that you should ease to as a new CFI. You know, when you're brand new, don't go out and start doing the hard stuff. Work in slowly to autos, work into low RPM recovery. Just, you know, you can always get help from another instructor when you're not comfortable doing something. So thanks to Chris for, again, you know, coming forward with these things that's happened to us in the past. That's how we learn, is we all here try to share all the dumb stuff we've done, or things not necessarily dumb, maybe an accident happened to us beyond our control. Whatever the case is, hopefully you all are learning from, you know, the things that we've been through. So I think next I'll roll the videos. What do you think? I'll put them up there on the screen. Just pause if you want to talk about that one first.
Yeah, I guess, are we on?
Yeah, you guys are back up. You guys go ahead and talk what you think after seeing that.
Well, you could obviously hear the low rotor RPM horn going off in the R44. How far can you fly it with the horn going off? Catastrophic.
It's one of those things where I'll make my disclaimer. I wasn't there. I wasn't in, you know, I wasn't flying. I wasn't there. So, you know, you hear the horn first. And then if you listen closely, you can hear the RPMs just...
You can hear the engine bogging down.
Yeah, you can just hear them dwindling. And I don't know what the pilot was thinking at the time. I don't know. But it looked like from the video, I mean, you can fly the 44 or the 22 with the low RPM horn sounding and still be okay. It's a warning, so you need to correct it, but you can still, you know, there should have been corrected within a couple seconds, I would think. I don't have an answer for you on this one, because if you look at the video, you can see right below him was flat land. You know, the horns are blaring. You know, lower that collective, roll that throttle on. If that's not working, enter the auto. I mean, I think it's safe to say that an auto rotation can pretty much get you out of almost anything.
Yeah, of course, anytime we look back at something, you know, we can Monday morning quarterback
right.
it.
And that's
obviously.
And I didn't, you know, and I'm not here to poo-poo it or anything like that, but we are here to learn from mistakes. Where, I mean, I shared my story earlier, and, you know, I've learned from that mistake. And if we can learn from this pilot's actions or lack thereof, then...
The horn was on. He had options. He very easily could have landed it if he'd have thought of it or made the decision to do it.
Yep.
Awesome. You want to roll the next one?
Going before that, though. Did you hear it?
Well, that lady screaming was a little distracting.
Right. And you can hear it bogging down now.
All right, go ahead, guys.
What you got?
There again, the horn was doing its job. What was going wrong with the aircraft is anybody's guess. Transmission could have been failing, engine could have been failing, but the bottom line is he didn't deal with the low rotor RPM properly.
And you know, we've all given rides, and I don't think I've ever had people scream like that. Now, granted, he had headphones on and they didn't. I don't know, but as soon as he lifts off, you can almost hear the horn. I mean, it's almost a couple seconds after he takes off that you can hear it. But that lady's screaming and hooping and hollering masked the horn sound, so you could barely hear the horn from, you know, listening it out here. Now, it should have gone through his headset, I think. But, you know, the people in the aircraft, that's one of the things you got to mention to them, is like, hey, let's don't yell or scream, have a good time, but let's not do this.
Very distracting.
But that's distracting, which maybe he was too concerned listening to them yell and scream that he wasn't paying attention to the horn was a sound and pretty much from takeoff. And right as they got over the water, you can hear the engine starting to bog down a little bit, or the rotor slowing down. So I don't know, the horn's there along with the light.
There's aircraft out there without a horn.
Yep.
You know, so a pilot needs to be watching those gauges.
Or light. Actually, there's aircraft out there that have no...
Well, the Hiller we owned.
Yeah.
I was flying it when the transmission failed. And what I noticed is I'm full throttle and the RPMs are still dropping. So what do? You have to lower the collective to keep the RPMs in the green. And eventually you're lowering it more and more. And then you're in auto rotation just to keep them in the operating range.
Well, and speaking of that, that's... another Hiller that I was flying, full fuel. I was the only one in there, and when I picked it up, it seemed a little, you know, it seemed like it was in, the RPMs were in the green, but they were in the low green. And I'm like, well, this, you know, this doesn't seem right. I'm the only one in the aircraft. It should be good to go. But I was maintaining RPMs in the green, but they were low green. And then come to find out later, it ended up having a bad cylinder. So. You know, but yeah, there again, there's
an aircraft that doesn't have a horn. To pick on Robinson, a lot of Robinson crashes, but probably because they're more popular. But I could see how a Robinson pilot, you know, would get a little bit spoiled maybe with a governor and the alarm and the light that would come on. But you know, in the rotaway, there again, owned a rotaway for a while, and you know, there was no warning features like a light or a horn. You just had to watch those gauges, and twice I had kind of an unusual thing where the engine RPM and the rotor RPM split in flight. Rotor RPM is dropping, engine RPM is raising because of cog belt failure. So there's something that you don't think about. You're always thinking about the engine just quitting or a loud bang and something's not working, but a gradual spread of the needles and leading into an auto rotation could happen in different fashions.
Yeah, and when you watch both of those, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is, why didn't either one of them land? You know, the first one, he was flying over some small areas, but still, a road, a parking lot, or something. Why wasn't he descending again on the ground? And then the second one, the thing that comes to my mind is, when you listen to that video, that her screaming is like the same pitch as the low RPM horn. And you don't even realize the horn's on for a little bit. It's like, is the horn on along with her scream? You know, people want to have good time on helicopter rides, but I would never have people. I'd be like, hey, you know, can you tone it down here a little bit? You know, people want to have fun, but geez. So we can quarterback it all day, but yeah, the horn's on. Get it on the ground would be number one as you're trying to fix that. Saw Valentine, great class guys. EMS, do the companies have a routine for pilots to practice emergency procedures? Yeah, you in EMS, you get emergency procedures when you first go to work for the company, and then once a year you get a 135 check ride. Other than that, throughout the year, no, you can't practice emergencies. You cannot practice emergencies without a check airman on board. So you fly for the entire year, and then once a year you get a 135 check ride, and there's your emergencies. Now, that's the last I flew EMS. There may be some companies that have changed that. I know one of the companies I worked for talked about giving them a recurrent thing about 6 months, but for 5 years, 135 operator I was with, as an EMS pilot, you could not practice emergencies, you couldn't do quick stops, you could do nothing but fly point A to point B, and then check airman shows up, and that was our complaint was, okay, you show up once a year and you want us to go out and be proficient, and all these maneuvers and emergencies with dual engines and governors, and those systems get pretty complicated, and then you'd struggle a little bit on maybe in a practice maneuver, and they're like, well, you know, you should be better at that. Well, yeah, you give me one time to do it once a year. That was one reason I didn't like EMS, quite honestly. I mean, what I do now, we go out and practice emergency stuff all the time. It's on our minds, we talk about it, it's in training, we go out and we do it. And then to get an environment where I'm an instructor and heavy and I love doing that stuff, and then 12 or 11 years and 59 days out of the years, I don't get to practice emergencies. In the aircraft that I fly every day as a professional, I have no chance to practice emergencies. That's one thing I didn't like about flying EMS. So, you know, for companies that may give, you know, additional training, that's great. And maybe some other companies do something different, but that was my experience for 5 years. Once a year, you got to fly instruments once a year. So, check airman shows up, and you're expected to go out and fly a full range of every emergency, fly instruments, and do it all. But you didn't get to fly it the rest of the year. You can't fly instruments during your work year. You know, your VFR, you're not an IFR flight plan. You can't practice IFR on a VFR EMS mission. All right, enough of me whining about EMS. You know, you look in the safety notices, and Robinson, I like the safety notices and tips a lot, and there's like four references to different ones, and one of them says, as long as you, accidents are almost always survivable as long as you have RPM, you know, right out of the Robinson handbook. And it's just something that we have to all be aware of all the time, always be conditioned. The one I like to mention is the airplane pilot's high risk when flying helicopters. It's no disrespect, but that's right from the Robinson factory, because you got to be conditioned to get that collective down.
We were talking, Kenny and I were talking earlier about practicing and how we get conditioned. You know, that first, when Kenny was talking about that EMS aircraft that that crashed, he hit the ground at 40 degrees and at a high speed, obviously. But one of the main things they talked about is that he didn't slow down, that he wasn't trained to slow down and enter the auto, which then Kenny and I started talking about how we train to do auto rotations. And, you know, we were talking about a lot of times when we do autos, we're in the pattern. And the way we train here is when we turn final, we're at, you know, 60 miles an hour or 60 knots, and we're at 300 AGL. Well, sometimes when we're setting up for the straight in, it's almost the same thing, except we're at a higher altitude. I personally instruct my guys, we are always at cruise airspeed to enter the auto, because that conditions the brain that you have to go aft cyclic. You have to slow the aircraft down. So with my students, we'll go out there and, you know, maybe we'll come around, we'll do a longer downwind and then set up for final. That way we can be at cruise 110 knots or 85 knots or whatever we are. That way they have to use aft cyclic to slow down to that 60, 65 range. Now part of the problem of training new students is they're anticipating that. So as we get closer to the runway or closer to our spot, they start to automatically start slowing the aircraft down. So, but again, you know, you have to get that aft cyclic in there, and you have to, what's the old training motto or whatever? You have to train.
Rats.
You have to train like it's real life, or you have to whatever. I mean, you're not going to be cruising along in a helicopter at 60, you know, when the engine quits. You're going to be in cruise airspeed. You're going to be at cruise. You're going to be cruising. You're going from point A to point B when that engine quits. You got to, you know, lower that collective and aft cyclic and get that pedal in there.
It's never going to happen like what you thought it would, or how you've trained for it to happen. It's never going to happen that way.
So, you know, and get that, and then back to the RPM. I told Gary this earlier. It's got to be a conditioned response. You know, you saw my slideshow. I said it three times: roll on throttle, lower collective. Roll on throttle, lower collective. Roll on throttle. Lower. It has to be an automatic response. Yes, most manufacturers build in a delay for the RPMs, but Robinson R22, like I said, it's quick. You can lose that RPM very fast. Now you can gain it back very fast, but you can lose it quickly. The Enstrom, you know, there is that 2 second delay to get it fixed. But, you know, you gotta train how it's gonna happen. It's gotta be conditioned. It's just like we're all in law enforcement, you know, it's an automatic condition. Hand to gun. It, you know, I think they say it takes like 1,000 repetitions to train the brain to do it. But that's my spiel. I don't know. Anybody got any questions on that? It really is that simple. Lower collective, roll on throttle. Roll on throttle, lower collective, you know, to get that back.
Yeah, I think when things go bad, it's normal human psyche to have a little bit of denial in there.
Yeah.
For a split second, you know, maybe denying what you're seeing or what you're feeling or hearing before you react. There is a company that stopped by and gave us some T-shirts, hats, and some literature on a product that they're promoting. There's an STC to put a collective pull down on the Robinson R22 and R44, which they don't specify how much it costs, but it might be something to look into if you have a flight school or if you own one of these aircraft. It's Helitrack is the company that has this out, and if you need more information on it, feel free to email Kenny or I, and we can give you the contact information. They have not given us anything to promote their product besides hats and T-shirts, but it does sound like a pretty cool thing, and if it saves somebody's life, it's definitely worth helping them get the word out. They also sell a autopilot system for the Robinson product as well.
So this Helitrack, you said, so when you get low rotor RPM, it automatically pulls collective down for you.
While the pilot is in denial or hesitating to do the right thing, it's pulling the collective down to get your RPMs back. In an airplane, speed. Can't give up speed, right?
Right.
But
yep.
In a helicopter, we can't give up RPMs.
That's why, I said it can happen at any airspeed. Rotor stall can happen at any airspeed. So,
ask if anybody viewing has an experience with it or heard of it.
Does anybody out there know about this collective pull-down feature? Has anybody flown an aircraft that's equipped with that?
It's pretty new, right?
Jump in the comments and let us know. Apparently, it's been out there long enough for them to get an STC to market it and put it on the aircraft legally. It sounds like a really good idea.
Training is the number one. And Kenny was talking about how can you go out there and practice and have a perfect auto or low RPM recovery when you only practice it once a year. Well, I'll tell you what, some of the best practice I get is instructing, because
yes,
we're always doing auto rotations. We're always doing low RPM. We're turning the governor off to fly the R22 without the governor. We're, you know, doing 180 autos. We're doing failure at a hover. I mean, we're always, the repetition is there, and we're getting, as instructors, we're getting that, and it's great. But yeah, it's a skill that you can lose if you don't practice it. And, you know, fortunately for us, we're busy sometimes, especially over the summer, that we get that in there. So
you get a guy that jumps in a $1 million aircraft with the military, logs all these needed hours to jump in another $1 million aircraft for EMS, maybe never went through the CFI in the trenches training, you know, to do this stuff over and over and over. It'd be easy to get complacent, mm-hmm. kind of like being a police officer in a small town traffic stop. You know, maybe the last thing from the officer's mind is this guy's going to shoot at me.
Like in Plymouth?
Kind of like Plymouth.
Yeah, like small town like Plymouth. We never have any of that happen in South Bend.
I think it's kind of the same thing. Yeah. I think...
You know, it does remind me, though, too, is you said it exactly. You know, I think we all have a story of where we know a guy who, you know, has multi-million-dollar helicopter and has all the glass panel and has all the fancy stuff, but none of that can help you with over pilot skill. And, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of stories out there where you have every piece of equipment in the aircraft and you still wreck, you still crash, you know, just because of, you know, maybe the autopilot didn't work, or you didn't know how to work the autopilot, or, you know, you thought you had better skill. You thought with the glass panel you could go into the clouds just for 5 seconds and whatever. You know, training is your number one. That's your number one survival right there. So yes, this is, if we can have this heli track, you know, installed and save lives, that'd be great. But, you know, it doesn't replace the mental response of the condition response of
you could still override it. It says on the brochure. So you could still have a confused pilot, you know, that's trying to yank that collective back up because the aircraft's descending, despite the horn.
Yeah.
It's going to fly anyway. So.
Yeah, and I think it was definitely worth something looking at. I mean, these guys just covered it. The guy stopped in, showed it to us, nice guy, and I thought, well, it's pretty intriguing, and anything that could be used to save lives, why not? So I'd love to know more about it. I'm not going to judge it other than, hey, it's very intriguing, and I'd like to know more. I didn't see anybody else make any comments on that. The other comment there was, can RBM be managed without instruments? Electrical failure, ?
Would RBM be managed without, like, if you lost your tack? If you actually lost the instrument itself?
Yeah, you can always, I guess, the question is, can RPM be managed without instruments? Electrical failure. You can always operate the RPM with your throttle. I mean, we're learning from day one. Throttle is your RPM. Engine sound, you can control it by the engine sound. You can control it by, even if you don't have the RPM, once you've been flying, you know what, after a while you know where the engine should be and you know where the rotor should be. Not when you're brand new, but once you've been flying a while in a specific aircraft, you know how you can keep it at least enough to keep you flying as it starts going down. Some have low RPM horns, some not. If you had a total electrical failure, most helicopters, you're still going to be able to control the throttle.
Pull the circuit breaker for the tack sometimes. First of all, to see if they're paying attention to the instruments. I know we're VFR, so 80% of your time, 90% of your time, you're looking outside, but you got to glance in at your instruments, make sure they're working properly. So I have pulled the circuit breaker before on the rotor tack, and one is to see if they're paying attention to their instruments, and two, for them to show, don't panic, you're still flying. So, but I think primary to answer his question is, you know, you start to learn by sound a little bit too. And, you know, I think if I had a real tack failure, I'd be looking for a place to land, you know, because you just, you know, you need the instrument, but, you know, it's an important instrument that you need to fly. But yeah, I mean, don't panic if your electrical failure goes out or whatever and you lose your instruments. You know, do it by sound and get it on the ground.
You shouldn't lose both. The Ingitech, I believe, is energized.
Is it?
From the electrical system. I know the Hiller, back to the Hiller again, the junk we flew to get our hours.
Oh, the wonderful Hiller.
I flew
it
home without
the
rotor tack. Used the engine tack to get it home when or it was vice versa. Because we had to buy a tack generator for it.
Yeah, we did.
The engine tack dropped. I had to fly it home using the rotor tack. So you do have kind of a redundancy system there with two tacks. that are supposed to be joined.
Like this video for us. Share this video for us. If you're not a ground school member yet, I'm going to go back to Gary here in a minute. Let him tell you about the Chief Pilot discount we've been doing in November, inspired each week by Gary. Like the video, share the video, subscribe to our channel. If you're watching this on YouTube and you have not subscribed yet, do us a favor, subscribe to our channel. Because even if you're not a member, you know, do us a favor by, and if you enjoy our content, subscribe to the YouTube so that you can get notified of, you know, new videos and other things we have coming out. We do this live training every week. So like, share, subscribe, put your comments down below. If you're not a member yet, we have 24-hour trial on the monthly and unlimited memberships. One-day free trial, 24-hour free trial. The link for Helicopter Ground School is below in the description box. Go down there. Also, links for our Instagram and our Facebook page. Interact with us there. Come back every Tuesday. I'll go back over to Gary and let him tell you how you can get the Chief Pilot discount, and then we're going to wrap things up.
Okay, thanks, Kenny. A couple things real quick. Send us those pictures of you and your helicopter when you pass your check ride, and we'll gladly give you a refrigerator magnet. It's your checklist before you go out to fly. Hang it on the fridge, hang it on the locker at the hangar, and we'll get that out to you, free shipping. The other thing we do is we have the I Did It With Hogs t-shirt that we will give you if you send us a little selfie video of you in the helicopter talking about how you passed your check ride using helicopterground.com. And finally, if you're watching today, you could use my discount code GC15OFF and get a discount if you're not already a member of the Ground School. I know Kenny's been giving away the free live training Tuesday as a product, and so some of you may not be a member. There's your opportunity to jump on, save a little money in the process. And if you are watching live Tuesday for free, spread the word. It's not going to stay free, guys. And the people that have joined live Tuesday before we start charging for the event will be grandfathered. So spread the word. That'd be all.
Yeah, I'll second that. Gary and I have been talking about this. I mean, we have a lot of time and energy in this. Monday getting ready, Tuesday doing it, Wednesday putting up replays or whatever. And this is cool and we enjoy it, but you know, it's not gonna be free forever. If you're a member, you get it along with the membership. We are gonna offer live training Tuesdays, I think, as a additional product. So it's something you can get without getting the whole program, but you could purchase and become a member of just Live Training Tuesday. But that is going to change. So FAA Wings, that's in place. Gary's done. We've talked about that each week. The Wings is up and running. The quizzes are in there. Gary's added even more quizzes. And now we got another new something else we're going to introduce that's more on a section-by-section level. But rather than going and bore you with that, we're going to wrap it up so we can keep these things at an hour. Thank you, everybody that was in here. I think I mentioned everybody. Like, share, subscribe. Go down below, join Helicopter Airline Ground School, become a member, and we'll see you next week.
Discover the number one helicopter training system on the web. Welcome to Helicopter Online Ground School. Now you can attend Helicopter Online Ground School from the comfort of your own home, at your own pace, 24 hours a day. HelicopterGround.com